25 women serve in the United States Senate, and that is regarded as real progress for women, even though they are more than half the population and a quarter of the Senate. 25 is better than none, and that's where we were through much of our history. The struggles of the women who went first in politics are outlined in a new book for younger readers called Leading the Way, Women in Power. It's the work of a politician and a writer, mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, Janet Howell and Teresa Howell. Janet Howell has been a Virginia state senator since 1992, now the longest-serving female legislator in Virginia. Teresa Howell, her daughter-in-law, is the author of several books for young readers, including the Scout Moore Junior Ranger series. Illustrations are by Kylie Akia and Alexandra Bai, and Teresa Howell is our guest on The Exchange. Teresa, welcome.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here, Jeffrey.
This is a bit different from creating characters primarily aimed at interesting kids. How did this project develop?
Well, it's interesting. Janet and I, my mother-in-law, were sitting around her kitchen table shortly after the 2016 election, and we were talking about politics. We often do. And the conversation kind of steered towards role models. I have two daughters, one's in high school, one's in middle school. And we were kind of just wishing that there were more visible role models for girls in politics, or even boys, to see what the face of leadership can look like. And we kind of put our heads together. Like you said, she's a politician and I'm a children's book writer. And so we made the book that we wanted to see and worked to make it happen. And Janet made the comment at the table that day that she wished she had a book like that, because when she was starting out, there wasn't anything like that. And she kind of felt like she was starting out in a vacuum, getting into politics as a woman. So we're hoping that, like you said, things are changing, but there's still some growth and progress that needs to be made. We're hoping that by telling the stories of some of the prominent women in politics, we can change that, help girls see what's been done before them and how they can get involved.
There have been other books on notable women in politics for younger readers. Cokie Roberts, for example, did a junior young adult version of her book. Was there anything differently or new you wanted to try in your approach here?
Yes. We wanted to focus in on politics, but all different areas in politics. So we have Supreme Court justices, we have district attorneys, we have mayors, senators, first ladies as well. And we wanted to kind of start historically. We look at Abigail Adams. She's the first one in the book, historically speaking, all the way up until today. And then the other thing we wanted to do was create a bridge between those women's stories and what readers can do to get involved themselves. So I know when I was a kid and I would read biographies, I would kind of think, well, that person was extra special or they had something that I didn't have. We're trying to kind of break down that perception and show girls that if you want to get involved, if you want to see some change, you have something to say, this is what you can do. These are some of the things that these women did that you can also do to get involved in your communities.
That's really interesting what you were just saying about your own response as a child, that to think that that you know, these were people who had exceptional powers, and in some cases they had to be able to break through the constraints of their times. But so you're trying to say, no, it's not that exceptional. Get out there and do it.
Well, I agree with you that a lot of the women in the book are absolutely exceptional. You know, when I was doing the research, I thought, oh, I was just staggered by some of the adversity that they had to overcome. But a lot, we didn't want girls to be intimidated by the stories and kind of break it down for them. So, for example, when you first open the book, you'll see something called the power symbols. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of looked at each woman and looked at the skills she was using or the tactics she was using to make a difference. And we came up with these 8 power symbols, everything from persistence to community, communication, diligence, resourcefulness, for example, and break down what each of those looks like. And then so next to each woman, she'll have the power symbol up to 3 or 4, I think, that she exemplified the most. What does persistence look like? What does it mean to, you know, be involved in your community? How do these women communicate? And sometimes it is like sending out postcards, making posters, things that kids can do, you know, to start to make a difference. And none of the women, even though they may have been exceptional, rose to power in a flash by one single event. A lot of them, you know, worked over the years, little by little, you know, incrementally to make the difference that they did. And so we wanted to emphasize that for kids too.
Now, when you get to the power symbols, the powers include integrity. So it's clear, I have enough trouble explaining that to adults. This is not a young kid's book. What age approximately were you aiming for?
That's a good question. Our hope is that the book can be used in multiple different ways for kids of many different ages. So exactly, integrity is a big word, and we do try to break it down for the kids. But if you flip through the book, you'll see that every woman in the book has a gorgeous portrait. So it's visually appealing. And then we've pulled out one quote that the woman said in her lifetime. And, you know, that's written in beautiful script by illustrator Alexandra Bai. So you can kind of look at the book on that level. You can flip through and look at the faces of the women and read something that they said. Some of my favorite quotes are Shirley Chisholm, who said, "If they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair," for example. I love that one. And then you can look at the power symbols too. You can say, oh, this woman, you know, she used empathy, you know, in her leadership. But then for older kids, there's a biography. And it always starts with the childhood of the woman. So kids can relate to what this woman was doing when she was their age, all the way up to their careers, through their careers. So you can dive deep. You can just flip through it and get something out of it. I think it works well at bedtime. You can read one or two biographies to your kids and talk about them. There's a lot of visual appeal in there, too.
All right, we'll talk about some of the women, starting with Bella Abzug, who just happened to be first alphabetically. The book does go alphabetically.
Yes.
We'll come back and talk more with Teresa Howell about the book she wrote with her mother-in-law called Leading the Way, Women in Power. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Today's discussion topic in this hour is women and political power. Obviously not a consistent marriage through American history, sort of still coming along as a work in progress here. Virginia State Senator Janet Howell, rather, and her daughter-in-law, Teresa Howell, who is a writer of children's books, joined forces on one to inspire younger women readers to go ahead and get involved in politics. The book is called Leading the Way, Women in Power. It features profiles of a number of figures in American political history, some you've heard of, some you haven't. You can join the conversation on the exchange and maybe suggest some for inclusion or people who inspired you at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You know, it still strikes me strangely, Teresa, when I think about the fact that it has not been even 100 years since women first got to vote on a regular basis. So there's, you know, that level of progress has been covered just in the last century. You could end up so with a pretty good list, though, of women. And I just wonder how many ended up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, that's a great question. We initially, when we started talking about this book, Janet and I put together a list of 50. And some of them were off the top of our head. And then, you know, some we're digging around and doing some research and putting them on the list. I think it changed about 20% between that first list that we submitted to the final printed edition of the book. There are a lot of factors that we wanted to take into consideration. And also the deeper you dig, the more you find out and you learn about women that you've never heard of. And you think, oh my goodness, we need to tell this story. We also wanted the book to portray a number of different political beliefs, you know, people from all over the country across the span of history. So we wanted it to have a diverse group of women in there too. But yeah, we had to make some difficult choices, but we did include in the back a section called More Leaders, where we just put in some of the basic facts about some women that we wish we could have given a full biography for, but weren't able to. So
you do have you got some blurbs from people who are pretty well known and a foreword from Hillary Rodham Clinton. So would people look at that and assume that this is a book maybe more for Democrats?
That's a possibility. it, in today's sort of divided political world, we took that into consideration. But we really did go out of our way to make sure that this book is equally balanced. We made the decision not to list the political party of any of the women in there. In our first draft, we did. We kind of went through and said, you know, Bella Abzug, Democrat, et cetera, Nikki Haley, Republican. And then we stripped that out. We thought, you know what, let's let the women's accomplishments stand for themselves. Let's kids make their own decisions and not further divide by political party. Plus, the political parties have changed so much throughout history. We didn't feel like it was important to include that.
I hadn't even noticed that until you mentioned it. I had not even noticed the fact that you left out the parties until you mentioned it. That's funny. I was just focusing on the women themselves, which the whole list starts with Bella Abzug, you know, AB. She starts alphabetically. Her quote, her pull quote is, "Women are not wedded to the policies of the past. We didn't craft them. They didn't let us." Bella Abzug actually represented my father's district in Lower Manhattan for a while, so a big and well-known figure in my life and family. But how difficult to explain a person who was this big for a short period of time and then off the national stage?
Well, like I said, we started with their childhood. You could see Bella is such a dynamic figure. Even when she was young, she was standing on the sidewalk speaking about things that were important to her and collecting money in a tin cup for, you know, causes that she thought were important. And she was coming up in an age where there weren't many women in politics. And there's just so many little interesting bits. We wanted the story, the book, to kind of show the progress of women in history. So you can see someone from Abigail Adams, who only has the outlet of writing personal private letters with her political opinion in them. Of course, her husband was quite influential. He was John Adams, the president of the United States. You have that, and then you come up through the suffragettes, and then you have someone like Bella Abzug, who wanted to get into politics. She wanted to be a lawyer, and she kept getting mistaken for a lawyer's assistant. You know, that's why she always wore this hat on her head, because she thought it made her look more professional, so people wouldn't mistake her for the assistant. The other interesting thing about her is she purposely never learned to type, because she was afraid that in her era, if she could type, no matter what her credentials were, she would be pigeonholed as the assistant and be made just to type and work for somebody else. So she wanted to work for herself and take a leadership role. So we try to tell stories that are relatable to kids, where they can see some of the challenges that the women had to go through and also see some of the things they were doing as kids.
And in her case, giving speeches at age 12 outside her father's butcher shop about the need for a Jewish state.
Yes, right. And so kids can put themselves in her shoes, or they can say, you know, I could do that if I wanted to. I can speak out on issues that are important to me. Or we really do spend a lot of time talking about the childhoods of the women as much as we can.
Leading the way, women in power. What's that?
Oh, and not focusing strictly on policy and the things that they did. Yeah, they're relatable tales.
The book, again, is called Leading the Way, Women in Power, by Senator Janet Howell from Virginia and Teresa Howell, her daughter-in-law, a writer of children's books. Teresa's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. You mentioned Abigail Adams a couple of times here, and the fact that she was very outspoken, but her only outlet really was letters to her husband. But she wrote specifically about women's rights to her husband. What kinds of things did she say to old John?
So I grew up in Massachusetts, and, you know, we talked about her a lot, which is probably why I keep mentioning her today. But she is famous for writing Remember the Ladies in a letter to her husband when he was on his way to the first Congressional Congress, where they were going to create the laws for our nation. And so she said, "Remember the ladies. Think of us when we're starting this new nation." Or if you read the further on in her quote, she says, "Or we will form a rebellion against you." I don't remember that as a kid, but and of course she didn't. But the other part of the story I never heard as a kid, I just remember loving her for that statement, was, you know, John did write back and basically laughed it off, you know, for all intents and purposes. He just like, "Oh, ha ha, Abigail, thank you very much," you know, and then proceeded to ignore the ladies, basically, when they were starting those first laws. So, you know, that's another common tale throughout the book, is you'll see not everybody succeeded at everything that they were trying to do. There was a lot of failure, but then resilience, getting back up and trying again and not giving up.
Now, there are some names in here that I've sort of heard peripherally through my life and never spent a lot of time to get to know. I knew that Mary McLeod Bethune was a big factor in education. Hers is really a stirring mm-hmm. story. What sort of opportunities did she have for education when she was a little girl?
She is one of the most inspiring people in this book for me. In fact, I had just been, you know, in my office all day just poring over materials about her life when my kids came home off the bus. And, you know, it's about a 0.1 walk from the bus stop to a 0.1 mile bus stop walk. And I said, you have to listen to the story of Mary McLeod Bethune. She was one of 17 children. She was the only one of her brothers and sisters born into freedom after emancipation happened. And her family, they were sharecroppers. And when she was about 10 years old, a school opened up in a few towns over that was offering education for children of slaves, former slaves. And her family decided that they were going to send one of their children to this school, and they chose Mary. So every morning she would wake up and she would do all the morning chores on the farm that she was responsible for, and she would walk 8 miles to school, which is what I was pointing out to my kids, and go to school all day.
Yeah,
right. Go to school all day, walk 8 miles home again, and do the rest of her chores, and then every night sit down with her whole family and teach them what she learned. And she believed in the value of education. She saw what a difference it was making in her life and in her family's life, that she started her own school for African-American children and had to stand up against the KKK, who threatened to burn it down, stood strong, and eventually got involved with the Roosevelt administration, speaking up for some of the concerns that African-Americans were having during that time period.
Yeah, very impressive person.
Story.
Yeah, truly. Mary McLeod Bethune. We've only gotten to the B's so far. We're obviously not going to get to finish the alphabet with Teresa Howell, who is the co-author with her mother-in-law, Senator Janet Howell, of Leading the Way, Women in Power. It's a book pitched at younger readers, showing some of the great examples of women who are really active in asserting the rights of women in the political realm. You can join the conversation on The Exchange, suggest some more people for the list, or talk about some memories you may have of people you thought were highly influential in asserting the rights of women in the political realm. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join us by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Another believer in education that you mentioned in the book, not long after Mary McLeod Bethune, is Hattie Wyatt Carraway, who helped her husband get elected to the Senate, and then something happened to her.
That's right. She ended up taking his seat in politics after he died, which is one of the very first ways that women got involved in politics, actually. Taking his seat, kind of continuing the vision of her husband, and then deciding, even though a lot of people were sort of discouraging her, deciding to keep going and run again. And so that was a brave thing to do, and she did in fact get elected. So that was, back in the day, one of the only ways. I mean, nobody set out, you know, it was to have their husband die in office, and then they stepped up. It was a difficult decision, I'm sure. But that is one way that women started to get involved. In fact, one of the interesting stories in the book is about Edith Wilson, who was the first lady, mm-hmm. and her husband became incapacitated while in office. And back in those days, there wasn't quite the press covering, you know, every detail of everybody's lives. But for better or worse, I'll say. And so they kind of hid the fact that he was not functioning as the president. Edith was, in fact, making a lot of the decisions and sort of acting secretly as president of the United States, secretly and unofficially. But those are just some of the ways that women initially were able to get into power.
Right. Yeah. Behind the scenes, for sure. In that sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as you point out, in a time when the media would not say, wait a minute, who's running things if the president's got a stroke?
Exactly.
Yeah, that would definitely happen today. Let me take a pause here and ask about Janet Howell, your mother-in-law, Senator Janet Howell. And are there many other women in the Virginia Senate? And has the percentage changed in the time that she's been in since the early 90s?
Yes, it has. I think she was the sixth woman ever in Virginia to be in Congress. And when she was elected, it was in 1992, which was called the Year of the Woman. And everybody was really impressed because four women were elected that year. And now they're up to 11. She just recently won the election early in November of this year. And so we're up to 11 now and still have a ways to go. It's about the same percentage that you cited at the beginning. I mean, there's about 40 senators. Mm-hmm. In Virginia, and we have 11 women.
Yeah.
So, and she is the longest serving female in the Virginia legislature.
Okay, so back to the book. Lots of interesting people, interesting lives. I can imagine the challenge of trying to fit them onto two pages each, but
yes.
was there a particular challenge for Hillary Clinton and what she's known for?
I don't know if I would say there's a particular challenge. She was the first in so many different arenas. She's just led in politics, been involved in politics in so many different capacities for so many years that we thought that, first of all, it made sense for her to write the foreword, and of course she had to be included in the book. There was a lot of information there. There's a lot of information on her childhood and how, you know, she was a leader even as a child, and you know, had difficulty because she was a girl back then. I mean, she was told she could not run as class president. In high school, she was interested in being an astronaut and wrote to NASA and was told, no, girls can't be astronauts, you know, just flatly denied. She was just asking about information. And then even in grad school, you know, faced some challenges that way too. So her story mirrored a lot of what women were going through at that age, but she kept persisting. You know, I admire her for never giving up, running twice for president. But yeah, there was a lot of information to include in her biography. And I learned some things I didn't know. I didn't realize she worked up in Alaska.
Sliming fish. I love that description.
Sliming fish, yeah. I had to put that detail in. There was so much information that I learned about her, and I thought, no, that fact has to go in. It's too interesting. So,
absolutely, yeah. That was a phrase I latched onto as well. So, all right, let's consider somebody else also in the C section of the book who is is definitely not as well known, at least in this time, as Hillary Rodham Clinton, but Soledad Chavez Chacon. Who was she?
She was the first Latina she was the second woman and the first Latina in the United States to serve as governor. She was one of the women that we learned about, but had to really dig deep to find information on because there isn't too much written about her. But she stepped into the office of governor when the governor had to travel. And so she took over just for a short period of time, but led well. And she's just a name that we wish that more people knew about. It was early on, too. I'm going to check my dates here. She lived from 1890 to 1936. So it was early on, mm-hmm. when she was serving.
Right, 1924, it looks like here, yeah. But the lieutenant governor had died, right. So she really was an accidental governor for 2 weeks. And interesting, not surprisingly, that there was some pressure for her to do some things during her short time there. And she resisted pressure to do things like curtail women's rights.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing you'll see, and I read some newspaper articles about it, is she was making history, but all the articles that you read are about what she was wearing that day. You can't really find too much else about her. You have to really, really dig deep. But yeah, she, a lot of people kind of jumped in and, you know, made some sort of funny proposals for her while she was in office. And she was known as leading well and steadily through that time. So
much more to talk about. Many more women to cover here with Teresa Howell, the co-author with her mother-in-law, Senator Janet Howell, of Leading the Way, Women in Power. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange. If you'd like to join our conversation and propose some women in politics and political power who've made a difference, join us by phone or email when we come back from the break. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking with Teresa Howell, an author of Books for Children, who, with her mother-in-law, Senator Janet Howell of the State Senate in Virginia, okay, it's the Commonwealth, I get that, joined forces to write a book about women who have been pioneers in politics. Some worked from inside the system. One had to work from outside the system, like Abigail Adams, but all made a difference in trying to shape the view of men that, yes, women should be equal partners in politics. The book is called Leading the Way, Women in Power. You can join the conversation with Teresa Howell at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Let's see, I was just reading the newspaper article about Soledad Chavez Chacon when she was placed into office temporarily as governor of New Mexico, which was a very new state at the time, in a lavender dress, of course, they had to mention. Yikes.
But you were talking about some of the proposals that came her way while she was in office. And one of the, I think, funniest ones is that someone was proposing that women with short hair, of course, in the 20s, women were beginning to cut their hair, needed to tip their hats to women with long hair. And so she summarily rejected that proposal in office. Thought that was silly, but
wow, that's amazing, the kinds of things that people come up with. But there we are, you know.
Yeah.
People in the future will make fun of our part of history, I'm sure.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. So Elizabeth Dole is in here. Obviously, it's a little weird that, you know, she and Hillary Rodham Clinton, because of alphabetizing, is they're both out of politics now. It seems odd.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, she's another enormous figure in politics. The quote that we have for her that I love is, when you're in your 90s and looking back, it's not going to be how much money you made or how many awards you've won. It's really, what did you stand for? Did you make a positive difference for people? She was another one, like Hillary, who from a young age saw herself as a leader and really had aspirations to be president, even from the time that she was a young girl. And of course, was married to Bob Dole, who ran for president. A lot of people were asking her, if she wanted to run for president. Of course, I guess the timing wasn't right, or it just didn't work out for her. But she was very influential and very, very active her whole life.
Now, so I noticed she had some contact with Senator Margaret Chase Smith, who gets her own entry in the book. And what was the contact with Margaret Smith about for Elizabeth Dole?
Margaret Chase Smith, you know, was so influential for so many women. She was who were interested in politics. A lot of people admired her and sought out her advice. And Margaret Chase Smith told her to go to law school, which in that day was, you know, not many women were going to law school. And if they were, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for instance, when she went to law school, she was questioned continuously about how could you think of taking a man's spot. You know, it's seen as a woman getting into the law school on her own merits was seen as taking away the opportunity of a man. Mm. And so people felt, the women felt like, oh, they had to work twice as hard and be twice as good. But yeah, that's what Margaret Chase Smith told Elizabeth to do. But her mother, Elizabeth's mother, was not supportive of it. Still, there are some of those sort of preconceived ideas. But Elizabeth wanted to pursue her law degree, and so she moved to Washington, D.C., and proceeded on that track.
Let's talk about some of the lesser-known names here. Crystal Bird Fawcett is one I hadn't heard of before.
Yeah, she's another interesting one. She was the first African-American ever elected to a state legislature, and she was also acquainted with the Roosevelts, sort of this same sort of time period as Mary McLeod Bethune. But she got started traveling the country, working, it wasn't the YMCA, but a similar type of program.
The YWCA.
The YWCA. She was orchestrating programs for girls where they could, get some physical education and sort of similar to Girl Scouts. And they were actually starting to call the programs Crystal Bird Fawcett groups. And then she was another one who believed strongly in the power of education to reach more people. And she went back to school, went to the Teachers College at Columbia University, and always wanted to try to create bridges between people, teach them about each other, African-American concerns, but also at the same time just create bridges between, at that time, African-Americans and white people. That was one of her interests. And she actually ended up winning in a district that was more than two-thirds white when racial tensions were really high. So she was quite a trailblazer and a role model for a lot of people.
So the first African-American woman elected to a state legislature, and this was in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
The quote from her, I'm really impressed by how hard she worked to get people to understand each other. Her pull quote is, "We should not want to think of America as a melting pot, but as a great interracial laboratory where Americans can really begin to build the thing which the rest of the world feels that they stand for today, and that is real democracy."
Yeah, it's very powerful.
Truly. I want to talk about other people who came to the attention of FDR in his years in the White House. Frances Perkins also makes it into the book, and she was the first cabinet secretary to be a woman, right?
Oh, yeah. She's one of my favorites to learn about. She was the first cabinet secretary who was a woman, that's true. She got her start, I guess, her passion was workers' rights and women's rights, and she was actually in New York City at the time of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory that burnt down. I don't know if listeners are familiar with that story, but it was a
terrible, terrible fire that killed people who were locked in, and the fire exits were blocked.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And 150 or more women, young women, died. They were trapped. It was a horrendous tragedy. And she was just down the street at the time and heard the commotion and ran to the scene and was helpless to do anything at that time. But from then on, just made that her cause. And she fought for workers' rights and children's rights, too, because at that time also children were working in factories and things like that. And she was very brave. The first word that comes to mind, because a lot of people were opposed to it. I mean, she was up against some really big forces, and in fact would carry an umbrella around with her to, in many cases, had to, wrap people away who would come to her office and confront her about what she was trying to do, because money was involved, right? I mean, if you had to have all these new regulations and different things like that. But she is, in fact, responsible. We can thank her for weekends. She was the one who really advocated for weekends and 8-hour work days.
So we get both Saturday and Sunday off, thanks to Frances Perkins and others.
Yeah, Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. See that she did all the work she did to get to where she got. Let's see. We also have. I wanted to talk about some other firsts here. For example, how about Fannie Lou Hamer was pretty amazing. She was 44 years old before she knew she had the right to vote. She lived in the South. She was African American. What did she do?
She, you know, African Americans had had the right to vote for a long time, but it had been complete. It was complete news to her and everyone in her community that she had the right to vote. You know, that it was, you know, during the time Jim Crow laws, where there was just terrible, terrible African American voter suppression to the highest degree. So when she learned that she had that right, she was inspired and empowered and got on a bus with a bunch of other members of her community and went to vote. And those were also the days that even if you realized you had the right to vote, a lot of the African Americans were given a test that they had to take, which was completely illegal. I mean, white Americans did not have to take a test. It was another suppression tactic. And she was unprepared for that and didn't pass it initially. And then when she went back to her town, she was fired from her job for leaving to go vote. And in a more than one instance was brutally beaten. And she was thrown into jail, brutally beaten, all for standing up for her rights. And so she said, if you read her quote, fantastic. She meant it. I am sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so instead of giving up, she actually created the Freedom Democratic Party.
As opposed to the other Democratic Party in Mississippi, which was all white at the time.
Exactly. And so she wanted to create a branch of the Democratic Party that was focusing on African American rights and really taking head on some of the horrible suppression that was going on, not just suppression, but just, you know, civil rights atrocities. So she was incredible. And she also helped co-found the National Women's Political Caucus with other people like Gloria Steinem, Shirley Chisholm, Bella Abzug. She just kept going and you told her story in front of everybody at the Democratic National Convention.
In 1964, I want to see if there's a tape of that extant. I would love to see that speech. It sounds like it was quite a lightning bolt to the country and the convention.
Yeah, absolutely. She's so fearless, and was exposing some very uncomfortable truths to people. And people listened because her story was so compelling and she was so brave.
She helped pave the way for some of the first black women members of Congress. Shirley Chisholm is in the book. Barbara Jordan is in the book. And when I get to people like Shirley Chisholm, Barbara Jordan, and Geraldine Ferraro, I can imagine a generational split, that these are people that boomers knew well and respected, but I don't know if younger generations really know who they are.
Right. So, you know, when we're talking about history, and that seems like recent history to us, right? But for kids, it's, you know, way in the past. You know, you want to try to make the stories alive and relatable. And so all the ways throughout the book, whether, you know, someone was born in the 1700s or someone was born in the 80s, we want to try to tell a tale that they can relate to. And so we always start with the childhood of the woman. And we really focus in on what they were doing, what, you know, kind of the things, the differences they were trying to make, or just some little, you know, tidbits about their childhood, and then tell the story step by step of some of the things that they did to get to where they are today. I think on some level the older kids are going to be interested, and I think it's very important. We talked about Frances Perkins, to say this woman gave us weekends and 8-hour days. But we're trying to tell stories that kids can sort of sink their teeth into, and, you know, even though they are just two pages, bring them through the woman's childhood up so you can sort of see the influence she had growing up and how that affected some of the things that she did when she was in power.
Now,
some of the differences they made.
We have a little more than a minute left, and I do want to get Ida B. Wells Barnett in here because I fully expected to find the courage icon on her, and yes, indeed, it's there.
Oh, yes, she's amazing. She was born into slavery and, you know, was alive then during emancipation, and, you know, there was a period of time where it looked like our country was headed in the right direction with African-American rights. And then it sort of started to change. She bought a ticket for first class on a train, and she bought her ticket, had every right to it, and then sat down and was forced off. They said, no, you have to go sit in the section for African-Americans. That's not what they said at the time, but she, you know, latched her feet around the bottom of the chair, and it took three men to haul her off, and that was just the beginning. What she did that is so amazing is she became a journalist and exposed a lot of the truth about lynching in the South. She traveled and wrote articles. Her newspaper offices were burnt down because people were afraid of what she was saying, but she never gave up. She ran for office. She lost, but she also worked for women's right to vote, too. Incredible, incredible courage.
And completely fearless from what I could tell, or at least never let on that she did fear. And she's a great place to end. The book is called Leading the Way, Women in Power. It's by State Senator Janet Howell from Virginia and her daughter-in-law, Teresa Howell, who's an author of children's books, and she's been our guest today. Teresa, thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
All right, take care. That will do it for today's exchange. We are online at jeffexchange.org. If you're listening in the morning, we'll have As It Was and The Takeaway. In the evening, it's As It Was and news from the BBC. Our producers, John Baxter and Angela Decker of JPR News, student assistant Randy Babbitt at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.